Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, it's Pollinators Day at the state capital. There's a pollinators breakfast happening this morning. That's when advocates for pollinators will speak with lawmakers about legislation that they'd like to see passed to help pollinators. In addition, it's Healthcare Day of Action at the state capital today, and advocates for a public option are there calling on lawmakers to support legislation on that issue that is expected to be introduced in the coming weeks. After that, we'll have two regular Thursday morning features, the latest cannabis news with Leland Rucker. That's followed by food news on Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf live in the studio. Then just after 8:30 this morning, we'll bring you the latest episode in our new Trends series. It is a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County, and it takes a look at issues facing people that are often on the margins, whose voices need to be amplified. Today, we'll look at diversity and inclusion in Boulder. At 9 o'clock, we'll continue the discussion with a panel of guests live in the studio. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Two environmental groups yesterday filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency for failing to ensure the reduction of dangerous smog pollution from oil and gas drilling in Metro Denver and along the Front Range. The plaintiffs in the suit are the Centre for Biological Diversity and the Centre for Environmental Health. The lawsuit was filed in a California court on Wednesday, and it is an amendment to a previous suit, which now adds the Metro Denver area to an existing lawsuit that had included the Phoenix, Arizona area. The amendment filed yesterday says that the EPA has missed deadlines for approving state of Colorado plans that target oil and gas emissions. The nine counties in Colorado's northern Front Range have been out of EPA compliance for ozone pollution for years. In December, the EPA downgraded the area from being a moderate violator of the standards to being a serious violator. That now means that the state needs to enact stricter controls to reduce pollution. The groups involved in the lawsuit are calling for the EPA to make sure that areas violating air quality standards for smog have legally required plans in place to clean up one of the biggest contributors to the pollution, and they say that is the oil and gas industry. The plaintiffs say that this is a Clean Air Act citizen suit. Community members in Denver will rally later this afternoon to call on the school district to address systemic racism. The Denver Classroom Teachers Association, Black Educators, Coloradoans for the Common Good and DPS school board members will be rallying on the front steps of the Denver Public Schools Administration building later today. In a press release, Monica Hunter, who's an educator in Northeast Denver and a leader with the DCTA Black Caucus, said that the DPS board has known for years through the Bailey Report and the African American Task Force, along with stories from community members about the conditions in the district for Black people. She added that with a new group of board members elected, it is time for the district to work on tangible policy changes to address systemic racism in the district. The group is calling on the school district to make four major changes. The first would be to improve the process to approve so-called innovation plans that they say currently disproportionately strip the rights of teachers of colour. The second demand is to create a team to focus on the hiring of more teachers of colour. They also want to increase counsellors and other specialised service supports for students. And finally, they want an implementation plan for the previously passed Black Excellence Initiative. In today's weather, expect sunny skies around the Front Range, highs in the mid-30s, warming up significantly tomorrow, highs getting into the mid-50s and staying that warm through Saturday, but cooling off a bit on Sunday with snow coming in early Sunday morning and staying with us through Monday. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. The Healthcare Day of Action happens today in Denver. I spoke with Adam Fox, who is with the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative. That's the group organizing the event. And I asked him what legislation we're seeing in this session when it comes to healthcare.
What we've seen so far is a number of bills around prescription drug price and cost transparency. I think we expect additional legislation in that area as well, but we've already seen four or five bills introduced on that topic, and some have already started to move through the committee process and be deliberated. I think the big discussion, which actually we are waiting to see the legislation on, or it hasn't been introduced yet, is really around the public option. And trying to create a new sort of public-private partnership model in Colorado that'll provide some more affordable coverage options in the individual market.
Well, let's get into some more details about that, because there's a lot of discussion when it comes to this type of legislation. And when people hear the public option, I think they think of it as it's like a monolith, that this is some type of government-funded healthcare. So let's dig into exactly what this would be here in Colorado. What is some of the legislation? Like, what are some of the details of the legislation?
So we haven't seen the legislation introduced yet, but what we expect is really based on recommendations that came out from our Division of Insurance and the department that manages our Medicaid program in Colorado. And that report that they released in November really structures Colorado's version of a public option as a public-private partnership where the state would set some tighter parameters for insurers, set some limitations on costs with hospitals. But then it would really be the insurance companies that are already participating in Colorado that would be offering these plans.
Is this something that we're seeing in other states, or would this be relatively new if this does come to pass here in Colorado?
So this is a relatively new idea, but we are seeing a somewhat similar approach that Washington State is taking with their approach to a public option. Theirs is a little bit different, but it still uses more of sort of this public-private partnership model where the state is setting some of the structure that these plans need to follow, and then, but it's still using some of the existing insurance companies as the mechanism to bring those into market.
So this would work with the current Connect for Health Colorado platform?
That's right. The what we expect is that this public option would be offered through Connect for Health Colorado as well as in the individual market off outside of Connect for Health. So it would be additional options for people, whether they qualify for financial assistance through Connect for Health or not. And the idea is that this will help bring down premiums, and the hope is also to encourage another insurance carrier to enter those 22 counties in Colorado that only have Anthem currently offering in the individual market.
Is this being driven by the uncertainty really that exists now federally about the future of the Affordable Care Act, given what's happening under the Trump administration and the various legal challenges?
I think this approach is being driven primarily because too many Coloradans are still suffering with high healthcare costs and an inability to afford their health insurance premiums. So I think it's less about what's happening at the federal level, though that is, I think, a factor. I think to an extent, the way the structure has been envisioned thus far here in Colorado actually in many ways relies on the structure of the Affordable Care Act, because it's using our state-based marketplace, the advanced premium tax credits that are available through Connect for Health would be able to be applied to the public option plans. So it's in many ways it relies on the Affordable Care Act structure.
Well, take us through what's going to be happening on Thursday. This is the 12th annual Healthcare Day of Action that's going to be taking place at the state capitol.
Every year we bring consumers from across the state together to really walk them through what the current healthcare policy issues are at the state capitol, talk about some of the bills that we think are really important to consumers throughout the state. And we walk them through a bit of what it looks like to lobby legislators as a constituent. A lot of people don't realize how easy it can be to communicate with their state-level legislators. And so a lot of this day is really structured to help equip consumers to do just that, and on any issue, not just healthcare, but really trying to equip them so that they can be active on the issues that they care about.
How are we doing right now with providing health care for everybody right now in Colorado?
We continue to see our uninsured rate be at a historic low, but I think there are growing concerns about increasing out-of-pocket costs, not just in individual insurance, but employer-based insurance as well, and just an ongoing struggle with increasing prescription drug costs and some of the underlying costs of healthcare that are still landing too many Coloradans in medical debt or facing large medical bills.
So in terms of this, the public option legislation that you mentioned earlier, any time frame for that? When should people really start taking a look to the state legislature to see when that's going to be put forward into committee and have lawmakers debate it?
I think we expect that to be introduced in the next couple of weeks, probably. And I think that will end up taking up a lot of the healthcare oxygen in the Capitol building when it is introduced. But I think that's because it's a really important discussion. And I think it's important for consumers to realize they are going to get bombarded with messages from the healthcare industry, who is already vehemently lobbying against this. And we're not trying to disrupt the current insurance system. We're not saying that hospitals can't make enough money to keep their doors open. We're trying to rein in some of the outrageous profits that we are seeing in our healthcare system, and especially in our Denver and Front Range mega hospital systems.
Well, I know that Governor Polis is supportive of this. What other legislators are on board, or is this really falling along party lines?
I think we saw legislation on the public option be bipartisan last year. It did have at least a few supporters among the Republicans, and I hope that we will see something similar this session, though I am concerned with how much the healthcare industry is already putting against this effort, that may make it more partisan, unfortunately.
Well, the Healthcare Day of Action is happening this Thursday. It's February 20th from 8:30 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. Starting at the First Baptist Church on Grant Street, then that will be followed up by some actions happening at the state capitol. I believe there are going to be workshops and panel discussions and lots of different things. That's mostly going to be happening at the church. Is that right?
Yes, a lot of the activities will be at the church, but we do take folks over, really try to group them up by their district and set them up with somebody who can walk them through sort of the lobbying process and take them over to the Capitol to really learn what that process looks like and try to make it a little more accessible than most people realize it is.
Well, Adam Fox, thanks very much for taking time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It is 17 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, this morning, also happening at the state legislature, advocates for pollinators are gathering at the State House calling for legislation to support pollinators. Jen Cornell has more.
I have with me today Sue Anderson from the People Pollinators Action Network. Sue is going to tell us about the Legislative Pollinators Breakfast, which is happening at the Denver Capitol.
We're having the fourth annual People and Pollinators Action Network Legislative Breakfast, which is designed really to educate legislators and their staffs about pollinators and the issues affecting them and what's going on in that world and how they, as legislators and elected officials, can help. We'll have some bumblebees and probably some demonstration butterflies and some other critters for people to look at, learn about, and some other displays. Really, it's an opportunity to just sort of talk about the issues and the kinds of things that are affecting pollinators and our biodiversity in general.
Now, can you explain the two bills that PPN and Environment Colorado are presenting to the legislature?
Sure. We've got two bills that are specifically designed to help pollinators address pesticide issues. Environment Colorado is working with the sponsors on one bill which has been introduced, House Bill 1180, and that is to make a certain group of pesticides, neonicotinoids, restricted use pesticides. That means restricting their use to people who've actually been trained in their application. So that's one piece that hopefully is aimed at trying to reduce the amount of those pesticides that are being used by homeowners, other users who don't necessarily have the training or understand the impact of those chemicals on the environment. The second bill is on the preemption of pesticide control. So that means, like with many other issues, plastic bags, fracking, where the state has or had control over that issue and local communities couldn't control what was happening in their community. Well, that is true of pesticides. And so what we're suggesting to the legislature, and Senator Fenberg is sponsoring the bill in the Senate, is to restore that control back to local communities. So local communities can address issues that they're concerned about, you know, whether that's pesticide drift or whether that's pesticides getting into the waterways or trying to control pesticide use around public playgrounds, things that a public land manager can do currently in terms of their practice. They can stop using certain pesticides, but they can't tell other people within their jurisdictions to stop using certain pesticides. So we want the local communities and local voters who are concerned about this issue to have another tool to address the overuse and misuse of chemical pesticides in their communities.
And I see there are a couple other groups who are going to be at the breakfast. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, PPN partners with a variety of other groups on the issue of protecting pollinators and protecting human health. There will be other groups at the legislature as well, Butterfly Pavilion. They will be bringing some of those species to help with the education presentations and give people an opportunity to interact with those species and learn more about them. Other groups will be there who are supporting these two bills, and it's just really an opportunity to educate the public as welcome, although I also understand that many people in the public don't really want to be at the Capitol at 7:30 on a weekday morning. The design of the event is really aimed at our elected officials and their staffs to really understand ways that they can help.
Well, thank you very much. For KGNU, I'm Jen Cornell.
Leland Rucker is the senior editor at Sensi Magazine. He joins us on Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today, we're taking a look at the Clean Colorado program and its connection to the cannabis industry. First of all, Leland, what exactly is the Clean Colorado program?
Well, you know, if you live in Boulder and you've traveled to Denver on US 36, you've seen a sign that says Terrapin Care Station. It's in the north lanes there between Church Ranch Road and Broomfield Bus Stop. There's a bunch of them all over the area, actually. And they're among the 50 cannabis dispensaries, grows, manufacturers, edibles, producers that sponsor roadways through this Clean Colorado Act, which the state uses the Adopt a Highway Maintenance Corporation to partner with to run the program. And basically, you're sponsoring state highways and putting your name on a roadside sign. And it's one of the ways that cannabis businesses can use a little loophole in Colorado's very strict limits on marijuana advertising. And to do so, a company has to sign up with this Clean Colorado program. And the cost to participate in the program varies by highway, frequency of cleaning. Highway and interstate sections are sponsored in 1 mile segments and are cleaned either 12 or 26 times a year. And ramps, rest areas, and chain up stations are cleaned at least 12 times a year. And the rules governing this are in a different section than the rules governing the cannabis industry in general. And the Colorado Department of Transportation say the signs aren't intended to be an advertising medium, but they have become kind of a workaround for an industry with not many workarounds on advertising. And they're oftentimes placed near exits where passersby can find the businesses. On the other side, they don't really advertise the business. They just say, this mile sponsored by. And Colorado's rules, you know, governing how cannabis companies can advertise, they're very strict to keep them away from reaching minors. And this really, again, doesn't really strictly go to minors or anybody else. It just says, you know, this is sponsored by. You can't advertise cannabis on TV, radio. You can't do it in print unless you prove that the audience is predominantly 21 or older. And as any cannabis business or probably a consumer has found out, digital and social media platforms are very restrictive.
And has this been an issue so far? Because I'm sure so many people are familiar with those highway cleanup signs. As you said, it's not traditional advertising. They can't say, we'll give you a free sample or how great our product is. It really is just the company's name. But it does seem to be this kind of a loophole. Is anybody upset about this, or is this just something that's happening?
That's such an interesting thing because, you know, we've been selling cannabis since 2013, so it's been a long time. But now, all of a sudden, a bunch of adopt-a-highway signs that advertise one non-local marijuana farm in Aspen have sprung up along both sides of Highway 82 in more than 10 spots, mostly between the county landfill and the airport. And this has just been in recent months. And so some Pitkin County residents and Pitkin County's government have complained, and Pitkin County Manager John Peacock wrote a letter asking for information about how often the areas are cleaned up, why the county wasn't consulted about what it calls larger signs. And it says it doesn't mean local sign codes. According to CDOT, the signs are legal. It's for a company called Dalwhinnie Farms. It's located in Ridgeway, which is 161 miles from Aspen, a long way when you're up on those mountain roads. And they got CDOT approval for the areas of Highway 82. They pay between $325 and $500 a year per segment sponsored. And they chose Highway 82 because the company plans on in several months to open a dispensary in Aspen, a very high-end dispensary in Aspen, and says it wants to show support for the community. And Peacock's complaint says that Pitkin County has not allowed billboards or highway advertisements for any business, local or not, for decades. I don't know what's going to happen here. I doubt whether very much because the signs are legal. You would have to change the law in order for them to become illegal.
Well, we did talk about the restrictions currently placed on the cannabis industry, but that might actually change itself. There was a law last year that could allow some more advertising from the cannabis industry.
Part of the 2019 Sunset Bill has a little thing in it that says that cannabis ads are going to be prohibited within 500 feet of schools, places of worship, and playgrounds. And of course, it'll still be subject to local regulations, but they will be able to use outdoor media. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes in the next year or so with all of this kind of advertising.
People can read more about this online at sensimag.com and catch Leland Rucker here Thursday mornings on KGNU. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
And it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats Thursday mornings right here at KGNU, and John Dendorf joining us live in the studio. It's an auspicious date, 2020, but it's also your birthday, so happy birthday.
Well, thank you, Maeve. It's I've been looking forward to this day for decades because I knew 2020. So at 8:20 tonight, be sure to lift a toast in my general direction, and I'll probably celebrate with some pie at some point today.
I might lift a fork full of pie and think of you, because, of course, pie is always on the menu at Radio Nibbles, but particularly next week, there's an exciting event coming up.
Yeah, about a year ago, the Niwot Historical Society called me up and said, "Hey, John, you want to do a lecture about pie?" And I said, "Sure," and then promptly forgot about it. And then they reminded me a while ago, and I said, "You know, February 26th, the history of pie." And that's what I'm going to talk about. I've never done this before. I'm going to trace the history of pie from pretty much the dawn of time until February 26th.
I'm not sure anybody's ever done it before, John, so you're in good company.
I'm not completely sure about that, and I'm going to highlight, you know, the local pie history, starting with the late 1800s, and especially, of course, I'm going to talk about the history of pie in Boulder County. And my part in that national, you know, we've talked about the, you know, a lot of people who listen to this show regularly know all of this stuff. But, you know, National Pie Day was created in Boulder in 1975. We had the Great American Pie Festival here, the National Pie Championships. And then I'm going to finish up by talking about the terrible incident of Piegate. And finally, my dreams for a pie future.
Will you also talk about your own history with pie, how you first got so enamored with the crust?
Yes, yes. About the there was an incident of what we call pie evening. I can't really go into it any further right at this moment. But
Will have to go along Wednesday, yeah. February 26th, and hear more.
And we're going to serve. There's going to be a half hour of pie consumption beforehand. I'm going to bring some pie artifacts also.
Get your pie on. It's all happening next Wednesday, February 26th, 7 p.m. Doors open 6:30. It's at the Left Hand Grange Hall, which is in Niwot. That's such a wonderful venue, too. So if you've never even been there, it's going to be a really fun night. I can't think of a better place to eat pie and listen to John Lendorf. In crust, we trust. But there's lots of other food news, though.
Very important one. February 24th at Sanitas Brewing is the annual CSA fair. Look, if you're even thinking of getting a CSA this year, I realize it's cold and snowy and everything, but there's a lot of these CSAs at local farms that are going to fill up really fast. In other words, you won't be able to get a CSA share from them of vegetables and meat and everything else. So if you go to this, you can find out, I mean, there's vast differences between Kilt Farm and all the other, you know, farms that offer CSAs, and this is a great opportunity.
It's also a great way then for farmers to know, okay, well, I will have this income, because it is so seasonal and it's so tenuous for so many of our local farmers, that having the CSA support really creates a little bit of financial stability.
And it means that you are actually walking the talk about eating locally.
Walk the walk. Best thing you've tasted this week?
I'm working on a barbecue story, and I went down to Greenwood Village. It was quite a haul. But J-Bo's barbecue, it's Louisiana style, and absolutely wonderful. It really was great flavor, great smoked meats, and but they also do beignets, and that of course made my day.
Well, this week's Nibbles column in the Boulder Weekly is about using more shapes of pasta, because spaghetti and elbows, you know, that's just more than we can do.
You know, there are other shapes, and I talk about the possibilities.
Well, this month's Sensi column talks about what we'll be eating in 2040.
Luckily, it will include pie.
Oh, good for you. Well, in crust we trust. Don't forget the history of pies in Boulder County, Wednesday, February 26th. And, of course, John Lendorf, every Thursday morning. Bon appetit.
Happy 2020.
Don't make me coax you, moax you. Eat the tables and chairs.